Good evening and welcome to South Sudan in Focus on the Voice of America. I'm Nabil Biagio, working from home on this pre-recorded program via remote from Washington. Here are some of the stories we're covering today, Tuesday, May 25th, 2021. The UN World Food Program is condemning the looting of humanitarian assistance in Pibor.
Unfortunately, in Gumrook specifically, the food, while being stored in one location, came under attack. Armed groups attacked it. They stole and looted everything.
A local commissioner say pastoralists from Turkeka have started leaving Lanya.
I can now confirm that the 4 payams out of 5 in Lanya County are free from the armed Mandari cattle keepers. In the last 48 hours, there has been no any incident reported, no killing was reported.
We'll have these stories and more coming up on South Sudan in Focus. The UN World Food Program is condemning the looting of its food assistance and destruction of humanitarian storage units in South Sudan's Greater Pibor Administrative Area in Greater Jonglei. Armed youths suspected of being from Jonglei State's Akobo County attacked the Greater Pibor Administrative Area during the second week of May, displacing thousands of people and jeopardizing the ability of aid agencies to support food insecure communities in the area. Winnie Chirino reports for VOA from Juba.
Marwa Awad, head of communications at the World Food Program in South Sudan, says the WFP was due to distribute food to families that are extremely food insecure and cannot access food on a regular basis to feed the children in remote areas of Lekwangole and Gumrook, where violence erupted between armed groups. She says the fighting displaced thousands of people and tons of relief food was looted.
Unfortunately, in Gumrook specifically, the food, while being stored in one location, came under attack. Armed groups attacked it. They stole and looted everything and burned down the installations. So the World Food Program condemns this senseless violence because it serves no one. And it only spreads more fear and poverty.
Awad says 550 metric tons of cereals, pulses, cooking oil, nutrition supplements, and other food was stolen. She says the food was meant to treat or prevent malnutrition among children and women.
It upsets us greatly to see that this looting goes on and takes place when people know very well the kind of work that we're doing. We are working to help the people of South Sudan. And this food could have fed 33,000 people, South Sudanese, who are having difficulty living their lives, especially right now in the lean season when people's harvests have been spent and people are almost entirely relying on food aid.
In a statement released today, the WFP says violence between various armed communities has displaced nearly 9,000 people from Gumrook and Lekwangole to Pibor town this month. Awad says the continuous looting of relief aid and attacks on communities jeopardizes the ability of humanitarian agencies to support communities on the brink of famine.
The more this violence continues, the more it becomes stable for us as humanitarians to deliver the food assistance that people need on a regular and predictable basis. So we are calling on anyone who was involved in this violence to cease this violence and respect the neutrality of a humanitarian organization such as the World Food Program.
Awad says conflict has ravaged parts of the Greater Jonglei region for the years, which has led to the loss of thousands of lives and assets, worsening the humanitarian situation. She is urging citizens not to get caught up in the fighting, which she says will only lead to more people starving.
Right now, there are 7.24 million people across the South Sudan who are food insecure. And 50% of that number is in the Jonglei region, Unity, and Upper Nile states. So the more insecurity there is, the more food insecurity will be. These two things are very much linked. So we're calling on everyone in the country to just let cool heads prevail and allow humanitarians to do their job.
Despite the looting in the Greater Pibor administrative area, Awad says the WFP will continue to provide urgently needed food assistance to thousands of vulnerable people in the area. She says WFP reached 5.2 million people across the country with food and nutrition assistance last year. For VOA News, I am Winnie Serino in Juba.
The commissioners of Lanya and Turkeka counties of Central Equatoria State say pastoralists from Turkeka have started leaving Lanya. Over the past several months, the relationship between farmers in Lanya and cattle keepers from Turkeka have deteriorated after the local community accused armed cattle keepers of killing more than 10 people and forcing thousands of villagers to flee their homes. Daniel Friday Martin reports for VOA from Yei.
Lanya County residents and leaders say armed pastoralists from Turkeka County have displaced more than 3,000 villagers from their homes in Kenyi, Wuji and Kupera Payams of Lanya County. Following several complaints from residents and aid workers, the state government formed committees to resolve the matter amicably. About 2 weeks ago, Central Equatoria State Governor Emmanuel Adil Anthony visited the area to address tensions between the two communities. Lanya County Commissioner Emmanuel Kamis has told South Sudan in Focus that cattle keepers have started leaving the area.
I can now confirm that the 4 payams out of 5 in Lanya County are free from the armed Mundari cattle keepers. In the last 48 hours, there has been no any incident reported, no killing was reported, no looting was reported, and no new displacements. The Mundari cattle keepers moved out. Mukaya is free, Kenyi payam is now free, Kopera payam is free, Wuji payam is now free from these armed cattle keepers. And this is in compliance with the directives that we have given, that all these cattle camps leave Lanya County in order to restore calm and stability in the area.
Turkeka County Commissioner James Lino also confirmed that cattle keepers from Turkeka are being monitored and have been encouraged to return and graze their cattle in the county.
And I come off with Turkeka County.
As the commissioner of Turkeka County, I will return all the cattle being grazed in Lanya and Kajukeji counties, and we don't want to hear problems between the farmers in Lanya and the Mundari pastoralists. And I want to tell the people of Central Equatoria State that all the Mundari will leave Lanya County back to their homeland in Turkeka County.
James Kwaje, a local farmer in Lanya County, says although other camps have started leaving the area, hundreds head of cattle can still be seen roaming in the area.
The cattle herders are here close to our farmlands. Farming is part of our livelihood. We have been planting all sorts of food grains, including sorghum, cassava, and maize, and we want all the cattle keepers leave Lanya County because farmers cannot stay together with cattle keepers.
Governor Emmanuel Adil Anthony is calling on farmer and pastoralist communities to maintain peace as the government works to resolve the matter peacefully.
There is no need for us to personalize and generalize that there is a conflict between these two communities. This is cattle theft, and we are going to address it in the decisions that we have taken. And we would like to inform the public that the cattle keepers have listened to our call and assured the public that we are also on course for the recovery of this cattle. And we have called for calm from the population. They should not take the law into their hands. And we equally have called for calm in the cattle camps not to take the law into their hands.
Adil says he wants local farming communities to concentrate on producing various crops so that citizens of the state do not have to buy expensive imported food from neighboring countries. For VOA News, I am Daniel Friday Martin in Yei Town.
Residents in Goma are gradually getting back to normal life after the volcano eruption on Saturday. More than 30 people died as lava swept into a suburb of the city in Eastern Democratic Republic of Congo. VOA's Kate Pound Dawson speaks with journalist Jafar Al-Katanti in Goma, who reports the region now is being hit by a rapid series of earthquakes.
Today, people are very, very scared because of earthquake. Yesterday and the day before yesterday, it was around one earthquake in 20 minutes. But we can say, let's say today is one earthquake every 5 minutes. And now we already got some collapsed houses, collapsed buildings, and some people was injured and one dead.
So
even now, even now, just when you are asking, are you still there? There is an earthquake.
That's an earthquake storm. Oh my goodness. Has the government given any information about safety, about what people should be doing? Are people evacuating their homes now because of the earthquakes?
Yeah, the government said people who are some building have to leave them or to stay down and because of earthquake. And for sure, government doesn't have a lot of data on this eruption, as the volcanologist observatory was not working for a long time because of money. So they don't have any information to give to people. They just advise people to do not stay in houses in case of a big earthquake.
Is any aid reaching the survivors of this disaster, of the volcano eruption and the earthquakes?
Not yet, but a team of some ministers from the government from Kinshasa reached Goma yesterday in the evening. And they are in meeting today. We think that after their meeting, they will communicate. They will make a plan of for survivors. But from the day of eruption up today, there is no plan anything for survivors.
That was Goma-based journalist Jafar Al-Katanti speaking with my colleague Kate Pound Dawson here in Washington. You're listening to South Sudan in Focus on the Voice of America. Coming up, we look at vaccine inequity after this break. Stay tuned.
What do you think? People speak out on important questions. The question today:
why do you think more young people are turning away from farming?
You know, for you to farm, to be a farmer, you have to wait. I'm waiting, and you know, these guys, they don't want to wait. They want the money now. They don't want you to maybe you plant your corn or maize or yam, and you have to wait till maybe probably like how many months before it germinates and before you can even harvest.
Maybe because they feel or they view farming to be an old occupation or vocation that are mostly for the villagers. But then I feel farming is one that I know you can generate money from.
In most cases, young people in Africa think white collar jobs are the most earning. But in the real sense, it's the reverse.
What do you think? A daily discussion of important questions from VOA.
South Sudan in Focus is now on WhatsApp. Send us a message on +1 202 630 8011. Tell us what's happening in your area or give us your feedback on the stories you hear on South Sudan in Focus. We look forward to hearing from you on WhatsApp. That number again, +1 202 630 8011.
This is a message in the public interest from VOA Africa.
The World Health Organization and Africa Center for Disease Control say we all can help fight the global pandemic by frequently washing our hands with soap and water or using hand sanitizers. For more information on protecting yourself and others, check with reliable sources such as the WHO and Africa Center for Disease Control. And remember to listen to VOA for the latest on COVID-19.
That was a message in the public interest from VOA Africa.
You You're listening to South Sudan in Focus on the Voice of America. The head of the World Health Organization warns vaccine inequity is prolonging the COVID-19 pandemic, and this crisis will not end until transmission of the coronavirus is stopped in all countries. Tedros Adhanom Ghebreyesus spoke at the opening session of the 74th World Health Assembly. Lisa Schlein reports for VOA from Geneva.
WHO Chief Tedros Adhanom Ghebreyesus paid tribute Monday to the courage of the many health and care workers who have worked valiantly to save the lives of millions of people, often at the cost of their own lives. He estimates 150,000 have died, many because they lacked the personal protective equipment and vaccines that could have saved them. He accused the wealthy countries of hoarding life-saving vaccines and perpetuating the pandemic. He knows more than 75% of all vaccines have been administered in just 10 countries. This compared to just 2% of doses in the poorer countries. He called this vaccine inequity scandalous. He said it was unconscionable. A small group of countries that make and buy most of the world's vaccines control the fate of the rest of the world. He added the global situation remains very fragile, and wealthy countries should not be complacent about their ability to beat the virus.
No country should assume it's out of the woods, no matter its vaccination rate. This virus is changing constantly. Future changes could render our tools ineffective and drag us back to square one.
Tedros said one of the greatest drivers of this pandemic has been the lack of international solidarity and the sharing of data, information, pathogens, resources, and technology.
We can only address that fundamental weakness with a binding commitment between nations to provide a solid foundation for enhanced cooperation, a treaty on pandemic preparedness and response that can address the challenges that I have outlined. An international agreement that represents all nations and people.
Discussions are expected to take place at the Assembly on whether to begin negotiations on formulating a legally binding pandemic treaty to better prepare for and prevent infectious outbreaks. To date, the WHO Framework Convention on Tobacco Control is the only treaty that has been negotiated under the auspices of the World Health Organization. Lisa Schlein for VOA News, Geneva.
This is a message in the public interest from VOA Africa.
Hello, I'm VOA health correspondent Linor Mudu. The World Health Organization and Africa Centers for Disease Control say we all can help fight the coronavirus pandemic by wearing face masks that cover our mouths and noses when we are in crowded areas. For more information, check with reliable sources such as the WHO and Africa CDC. And remember to listen to VOA for the latest news on COVID-19.
That was a message in the public interest from VOA Africa.
Sierra Leone's health minister says his government is doing all it can to meet the mental health needs of its citizens. But Dr. Austin Demby says the needs far surpass what the government can do. This comes as Amnesty International releases a report today on mental health in Sierra Leone. The report is titled, They're Forgetting About Us, the Long-Term Mental Health Impact of War and Ebola in Sierra Leone. Survivors said they continue to struggle with a range of symptoms of distress. However, Amnesty says mental health services in Sierra Leone fall far short of meeting people's needs due to lack of government spending, insufficient donor support, and shortage of skilled mental health professionals. Health Minister Dr. Austin Demby says the government is looking for partnerships with private and philanthropic organizations to join the government in tackling the country's mental health crisis. He says the government puts a premium on human capacity development, including increasing its investment in the health sector from 7% of the country's GDP to close to 12%. Dr. Demby tells VOA's James Betty the need is so great that the government is asking for additional help.
I think the main message there is the government is doing its very best to address mental health issues nationally. So I think the whole nation was traumatized by Ebola. And I think what the government is trying to do is to build institutional capacity and capabilities to be able to respond to that need. But the need far surpasses what the government could do on its own. And so we're looking at private partners and philanthropic organizations, international partners to join with us and really have just a massive engagement around mental health in the country. I think the Ebola survivors are a special case because the trauma associated with that was so profound. And we have to look for ways to be able to address their needs. We have over 4,000 registered survivors here in Sierra Leone. We're looking for opportunities to be able to provide a broad range of services for them, including mental health services. But right now, the resources are fairly limited, and the facilities we have mostly is in Freetown area, and the workforce that's required for national coverage is much bigger than we could provide right now. But we're looking to make sure that we could change that narrative in Sierra Leone by both government investment as well as international partner support.
Across the border in Liberia, one of my reporters was looking at a report about people with handicap, and similar thing came up where they think that the government does not pay attention to their problems. Same thing this report is saying about insufficient government spending to pay attention to people with mental health.
About 3-4 years ago, the government investment in the health sector was about 7% of GDP. The government has dramatically increased that to about close to 12% of GDP. The government puts a premium on human capacity development, covering a broad range of making everybody be their true full potential. And this includes handicapped Sierra Leoneans, this includes Ebola survivors, this includes school children and the general community. So I think the government is doing a lot, but the need is so huge, the need is so great, that we will encourage, we'll solicit, we'll ask for as much additional help as we can to supplement what the government is doing, to be able to expand services beyond Kisii Psychiatric Hospital that we have to cover a national program. We're also expanding the technical skills that we have around psychiatric management. We're actually launching very soon a residency program so you could attract doctors with real expertise in psychiatry to be involved in this space as we look to expand services across the board. But as I said before, the need is much, much greater than what we could afford. And I think getting additional help, getting some partnerships of interested parties will go a long way towards us satisfying the needs for all of the subgroups that have mental health issues.
That's Sierra Leone's Health Minister, Dr. Austin Demby, speaking with my colleague, James Betty, here in Washington. International peace-building and pro-democracy organizations are increasingly concerned by what they see as breakdowns in trust between governments and their people across Africa. The United Nations Development Programme, or UNDP, for example, says administrations without legitimate authority to rule are causing cycles of conflict and instability. Darren Taylor reports.
What does it say when an African leader wins an election with 98.4% of the vote? That's the question posed by Dr. Roselyn Akombe, the UNDP's Governance and Peacebuilding Coordinator in Africa.
Where you have no legitimacy, where people do not feel that their will was reflected, where electoral results are contested, it becomes difficult for that leadership and power to really be able to exercise legitimacy, because that legitimacy was never given by the people because of how the process was done, whether it was legal or not.
The global affairs expert and former undersecretary at UN headquarters in New York says many African states tend to think that well-organized polls guarantee legitimate results, but that's not the case.
I always remember the example of South Africa in 1994. Election practitioners will tell you that it was one of the least well technically prepared elections. But the legitimacy was not questioned. The legitimacy of Mandela's victory was not questioned.
Akombe knows a thing or two about disputed polls. The Kenyan once led her home country's electoral commission. She resigned after the 2017 presidential elections, which Human Rights Watch says left about 1,300 people dead and 600,000 displaced. Akombe says she's worried that more African leaders seem bent on extending presidential term limits.
That's 16 countries that have changed their constitutions to be able to extend term limits. And out of those 16, 13 have just happened in the last 6 years.
That, she says, is a recipe for violence and evidence of a return to the old African trend of personalization of power.
What you're seeing more and more is personal rule. The return of populist leaders, some in countries that are too close to my own. And we've seen the consequences of that when you have the return of personality cults that make it really difficult to do simple things.
In her home region, Yoweri Museveni's been president of Uganda since 1986. In January, he was elected for a sixth term, despite allegations of electoral fraud and violent suppression of the opposition. Akombe says some African administrations are using COVID-19 as an excuse for what she calls their obvious failings. She describes the pandemic as an X-ray of African leadership.
Yes, it has brought its own complexities, but actually what it has done, it has brought to the open the fact that we've not been investing in health sectors, the fact that we've not developed social safety nets, we've not been investing in diversified economies. That's why economies that rely on tourism are going to have it very difficult.
She says as long as the legitimacy of many governments is being questioned and fought about, the development needed in the countries concerned won't happen, especially in the middle of the pandemic.
If as a leader you're not trusted by the people, even if you put together COVID-19 measures to stop the COVID spread, people are not going to believe you, because they will not understand. You have not built trust to be able to be seen that what you're telling them serves their interest. They will always be saying that there's something else. You're doing this for some other political reason.
Akombe's message to illegitimate leaders is, don't blame the pandemic for breaking your social contract with your people. Earn your nation's trust or go. For VOA News, I'm Darren Taylor in Johannesburg.
And that's all we prepared for you today. Let us know what you think about this show. Our WhatsApp number is +12026308011. I'm Nabil Biagio in Washington. Thanks for being part of our evening. Remember to always wash your hands with soap, practice social distancing, wear a mask when in public places, and do not escape from COVID-19 quarantine centers because there is no cure for COVID-19. Join us again tomorrow for another edition of South Sudan in Focus on The Voice of America.
Hope you open mind. Say I need a one dance. So him I come wine for me real slow. So me say my say Nasa bonin kumasa siyo. I need a one dance. So him I come wine for me real slow. So me say my say Nasa bonin kumasa siyo. Yeah. Oh,
stepping out tonight, boy, I had no plans. Till you came inside, I'm not gonna lie, you make my mind tick right. I go like vibe with you, then I go tell the truth. Tick tock, tick tock. I'm in call, bye bye. It's free, ha, and never. Them mother girls so good inside. You're the one I want. You're the one I.
sleep. Our bodies never met before. Think we're meant to be. Yeah. You're the one, you're the one, you're the one. Got a feeling strong. Yeah. Come dance with me, come dance with me.
Come dance with my inside. Pasa bonito, masasi, oh, yeah, yeah, oh, mm-hmm.